Have you ever wondered how to open a cash-only specialty contact lens practice? No insurance, no primary care, no optical, no hassles, and very lean office operations with one staff member, you, as the doctor. We're talking to Dr. Stephanie Wu, who practices in Las Vegas. This is a very special episode of Itrepreneur, as we did this one live on a Zoom call. Yes, many of you are probably on webinars and other Zoom calls during this COVID-19 pandemic. And we had about 25, 30 people on the live podcast where we open up to Q&A sessions throughout the episode. So you'll hear us pause and take questions and deliver answers to the audience. This episode is brought to you by iRocket Consulting. Yeah, that's my new consulting business where I help bring rocket fuel to optometry practices. Whether you're doing $0 in revenue because you're pre-revenue and you're just thinking about opening a practice, but you're not really sure how, well, I'll do everything for you and make the steps really open beautifully. Or you're doing $2 million in revenue and you're a successful practice, there is always room for improvement. Whether you need to help capture more insurance collections, do more money in the optical by lowering your cost of goods, or getting your opticians to stop thinking like opticians, but actually selling stuff and recommending sunglasses and making sales and keeping organized. $200 lab bills, $300 lab bills, that is not a normal thing. Use your economies of scale. I do so many things. You should go on my website, read all about it. I got 10 categories, 10 pages, just ton of information. Just go there already, read about it, look at the pictures, watch the videos. There's always stuff you can improve in your practice. It's COVID-19, but that's the time for you to research. Come on, you're probably bored of playing with your kids and dogs. Go there already. www.iRocket.com. EYEROCKIT.com. All right, I'll let you listen to the episode now.
Welcome to Itrepreneur, the podcast for Wizards of Eyes. I'm Dr. Raymond Brill with my co-host,
Harry Brill, and we're here to bring you stories about Wizards of Eyes. Yes, what is a wizard, Dr. Brill?
Well, these are folks that you may have heard about, may not have heard about. These are people who are actually very successful in doing what they do in all aspects of eye care.
We're not talking to self-proclaimed industry geniuses, experts, masters, or gurus, because we're talking to Wizards of Eyes that make it happen each and every day.
They are out there working every day in the labs, on the road, in the practices, in surgery suites, making lenses, making frames.
Yes, we want to hear these back-of-the-house stories about innovation, entrepreneurship, and make you feel excited to do what you do.
We want you to be energized about the whole eye care field. And this is not your big optical program. This is done out of the passion of our hearts.
Please go ahead and subscribe to Itrepreneur, the podcast for Wizards of Eyes on iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, or your favorite app. Also, visit itrepreneur.com where you'll find our latest blogs and special video content. That's www.EYETREPRENEUR.com.
Want to welcome everybody. This is an Itrepreneur podcast, but we're doing it Zoom style. And this worked so well last week for all of the scleral lens ones. I thought, let's try this. And I want to welcome our guest, Stephanie. Stephanie's got, she is the owner of the Contact Lens Institute of Nevada and has a world of experience to impart to us and as well as her general story. So just imagine a private practice that does one thing, just fits custom contact lenses, no optical, no insurance. And if you can imagine that, which is a lot of what we want right now, you'd be describing Stephanie Wu's practice. in Las Vegas. So Stephanie, tell us a little bit about yourself. I'm sure everyone knows you here, but for those that don't, tell us about, a little bit about yourself and your journey into optometry, first of all, and then maybe some interesting facts about Ed Bennett, and then about your practice. So,
well, I'm happy to, and I just want to say thank you to Dr. Brill and Perry for having me as a guest. We've been kind of organizing this for a while, and with all the current events, it kind of took a while to get here, but I've been a big fan of your podcast from day one. I remember the first 6 episodes that you guys had, and I listened to all 6 right away, and so I think I've been one of the biggest fans from day one. So thank you guys for this amazing podcast and for providing such valuable information for us practitioners who are in the trenches together, trying to get through the day to day and learning from each other. I always feel like every podcast I listen to, I learn a ton, even if it's not super relevant to what I'm practicing or how I'm practicing. So just want to say thank you guys. And yeah, I'll just go through a little bit of my history. I graduated optometry school from SCCO in Southern California, and then I did a year-long cornea contact lens residency at the University of Missouri in St. Louis with the famous Dr. Ed Bennett, who taught me everything I know. And from there, then I decided I was going to go back to my hometown, which was in Lake Havasu, Arizona. And it's a rural area, about 50,000 people, 100,000 in the winter time with all the winter visitors. So I joined up with this practice, which was no specialty lenses at all, just purely glasses, soft contacts, ocular disease, a lot of post-operative cataract management. My partner, I was an associate at the time, and it was my eye doctor that I actually joined up with. So I had known him for over 20 years. And he said, yeah, come on in. Like, we definitely need help. I don't know how much specialty lens business you're going to get because we don't do that type of thing, but I'm totally open to you trying. And, you know, I'm always up for a challenge. And I love specialty lenses. It's such a passion of mine. So I was really determined that even though this practice does not have specialty lenses right now, I am going to find a way to incorporate that into the practice. And so over the course of about 8 years, we grew the practice from essentially 0 specialty lens fits to over 2,000 active patients, which is pretty good for a small rural area. And then I just, about this time last year, I just kind of sat down and I thought, well, if everything was a perfect world and I didn't have to worry about money or anything like that, how would I design my perfect practice? What would I enjoy doing every single day? So I said, well, for sure, I know I love specialty contacts. So I definitely want that to be a part of my practice. And then I kind of went through, well, what about primary care? What about eye diseases? What about glaucoma management? Those types of things. And in the beginning, I thought, well, I can still do kind of all of that, but what's something that I don't really enjoy? And for me personally, I don't really enjoy the optical side of optometry, which is kind of a shock because that's like the bread and butter of optometry is optical, right? I mean, a lot of eye doctors would argue that. And, but I said, well, if I could get rid of optical, then I can focus on just doing specialty lenses. Maybe I would still do some primary care, eye diseases, glaucoma, all that. And so I thought maybe that's the model I wanted to go. But as I kind of became more crystal clear on my passion and my vision, I decided that what I love doing is specialty contacts. So I am going to find a way to just do that and get rid of everything else. So I started reaching out to some of the best in the industry. So Jeff Sonsino, Luis Sclafani, Christine Sint, Ken Maller, Hal Ostrom, just Ed Boschnick, Elise Kramer, Tom Arnold, Melanie Fergroso. I mean, I reached out to some of the absolute best in the industry just to kind of gauge, you know, how they were doing it. Did they have advice? Did they think this is something that is a sustainable business model? And I just got some amazing feedback and advice from some of the leaders in the industry on how to go about this. And so I just kind of started gathering thoughts and ideas. And then that's when I decided I'm just going to develop my dream practice. If it doesn't work, I don't care, because at least I tried and I can always go back to doing what I was doing before. So I decided my dream practice, only specialty lenses. I'm not doing primary care anymore. I'm not doing eye emergencies, red eyes, diabetic eye exams. I'm not going to have an optical. I am only going to have specialty lenses. And of course, many people thought I was completely crazy. And they're like, it's never going to work. You're never going to make any money. But, you know, I just decided it was the right time in my career and in my life, personally and professionally. And yeah, so that's kind of what has taken me to where I am now in Las Vegas. And the reason I wanted to do Las Vegas is because it's a larger market. So in Lake Havasu, only 50,000 people, whereas Las Vegas, there's about 2 million or so. And I didn't, when I was talking to some optometrists in the Las Vegas area, a lot of them, they didn't like doing specialty lenses, and there weren't that many people that were doing specialty lenses. So I saw it as a very great, unique opportunity instead of maybe New York or Florida, where there's already some really, really high-end practices that have really reputable names. So that's kind of what's taken me to open this new clinic in Las Vegas. And we opened at the end of January, and it's all specialty lenses. And I don't have an optical, don't practice anything else. And then to make things even more interesting, I also decided not to take insurance. So those are all, that's kind of what led me to where I am today. It's been absolutely amazing. I absolutely think it's the right time and the right choice for me personally at this time in my life. And that's where I'm at now, just kind of starting up my new practice.
Well, what happened to your old practice?
Good question. So I had three practices. So one in Lake Havasu, where I said I'm from. And then we own two other ones in a little bit of more rural areas, about 1 or 2 hours away from the main location. And my partner and I decided to sell to private equity, and that transaction went through on January 7th. So it was right after that I was able to make the transition here to Las Vegas.
Wow, it seemed like everything came together, right? Like your dream would be.
It is. It's really the perfect time. I really think that everything happens for a reason. And it ended up being the exact timing that everything was lining up, as far as my lease was going to start in at the end of January, and the equipment loans were going to start, and equipment delivery. So it really ended up being the perfect time for me.
So I know one of the concepts that my dad and I talk about quite often is we prefer long cab rides instead of little short ones. So, you know, an optometry, that would mean we like to deal in $1,000 increments, because it's exhausting, you know, $30 copays for an exam. And the patient walks with their RX, and then all of a sudden you're in the hole because you had front desk time, tech time, insurance billing, doctor time. So it's nice to see, you know, that format where you can have those nice long cab rides and patients that appreciate your service, and they're willing to spend it for the gift of sight.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that it became a little bit disheartening in my other practice when I would spend so much time with the patient explaining their eye condition, why they needed these certain glasses, let's say, and I went through all the different benefits, you know, what transitions do, or what a progressive lens does, What does a blue blocking anti-glare coating do? And like you said, Perry, a lot of times they would say that's amazing information. This was an incredible eye exam, and they'd give us 5 stars on Google, and then they would just take their prescription elsewhere. And then to make it worse, they would bring their prescription, their glasses back in from where they got elsewhere when there was a problem, and then want us to fix it. So I just became just frustrated with that aspect of optometry, and I don't see it getting any better as far as that there's a lot of online things nowadays and other apps. So I just decided to get out of that aspect completely, for at least for now.
Fantastic. So I want to jump right into, I think we're all interested in, we want to get into the inside of your business. So pretend I'm walking to your front door. What happens when you get a qualified, I'm going to call it a lead, because that's what we call it in marketing speak, at least Dr. Brill and I. So let's say someone finds you online, they put a form in saying, hey, I'm a cone. How do you handle the conversation from there that you are the key opinion leader in your neck of the woods and turn that into a sale?
Really, really good question. And I had a lot of different advice from different practitioners that have this same model of clinic. And I would say the way I approach things is, it's actually very similar to the way Dr. Maller does. When I spoke with him, he does kind of the same thing. When I get a referral from another doctor or a patient finds me on their own, I am the one that calls them, because like Dr. Maller taught me, you don't want someone calling that knows so much about their condition. And if the person on the phone has no idea what they're talking about, if they're talking about a base curve or a secondary curve and your front desk doesn't know anything, or they're like, yeah, I think we kind of do those lenses, then the patient has lost a lot of trust in you already. So I have taken it upon myself to answer every single email and every single phone call. So I will call the patient and I will talk to them a little bit about their journey, you know, what's going on with their eyes, because I want to make sure they're a good candidate for my office first. Because I do get random phone calls for patients that they just want a soft contact lens, regular fitting, which I don't really do, or somebody that's got macular degeneration, they're looking to see better, you know, something of that nature. So first I want to find out what's their condition. And then once they tell me what their condition is, so let's say it's keratoconus, or let's say it's a corneal transplant, something that I know that I could probably help them with, then I tell them about my clinic. I tell them that, oh my gosh, you know, you're in the right place. Let me tell you a little bit about our clinic. All we do is specialty contact lenses. We don't see regular eye exams. We don't do glasses. We specialize in this type of condition. And we have many, many patients that we have helped throughout the years see better. So I think that kind of gives them some confidence and some background on what my clinic is doing and why it's different than maybe someone down the street. And then I go into the process. So then I say, okay, so what you can expect is you'll be at my office for about an hour. And you're going to be working with me, the doctor. I'm going to take a few images. We're going to do some measurements. And then we're going to sit down together and go over everything. And then I can make some recommendations for you based off of what I see. And so then they are fully aware of what the process is, how long they're going to be at the office. And then at the end, that's when I tell them about the fee and how much it's going to cost. And then I tell them, and then if they have a question and they ask me, can I bill this to their insurance? I tell them, I don't accept insurance. However, I will give you all of the documents that you need to submit to your insurance company. So I am pretty proficient in billing and coding from all my years of having to just learn it on my own for my other practices. So I know exactly what codes to put, how to link them. I give them their 1500 form. If you're not familiar with that, it's a form that's generated with a lot of information, such as your NPI and your DEA number, license number, all that. And so I generate that and I email that to the patient right after the exam. Then they can use that and submit to their insurance to get reimbursed.
What if they need a prior authorization?
I don't do prior authorization. So if they do need a prior authorization, I mean, that's just something they'll have to work out with their insurance. But I don't do those anymore. But I used to. But as you know, they're extremely time consuming. A lot of times they require you to try different things before they will authorize what you're wanting to do. And I simply just, I don't practice that way anymore. If I think that a patient needs something, I am not going to play by those games and go through X, Y, and Z before I can get the patient into something I know will help them.
Hey, Dr. Wu, we're going to open the stage up to a question and answer session. We're going to take three questions. Let's try to make the answers fairly short or so. So the first one, Dr. Bollenbaker, you want to unmute yourself and ask your question?
Hey, how you doing?
Hi, good. Good to see you.
Yeah. So you don't discuss your fees and your vetting phone call and all that, because I'm sure patients ask.
Good question. So there's, of course, two different camps that I've gotten advice from docs that have been in this industry for a long time. Some people say, don't discuss your fees at all, get them in the door and do the consult. And then once they see how amazing and different your practice is and how different you are as a doctor, then present your fees and then go down that road. I am more on the other camp of, I kind of give them a kind of like a starting point, because I really pride myself on full transparency. I just don't want patients thinking they're coming in for the consult for, you know, $300, and that they might think that covers their fitting, their follow-up care, the contacts. They might think that it covers everything, and that's just the consult fee. So I have gotten more into the camp of, I kind of explain to them if they ask, you know, can you give me kind of a range? Just so they know kind of what to expect, because if there's absolutely no way they're going to pay $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, however much it ends up being, you know, I don't want to waste their time and mine as well. So I have gotten more into explaining kind of a ballpark of what they might be looking at for a full program. And that way they have that in their head. And I think that has done really well. Because every patient that has come in that knows that information has followed through with the lens fitting process.
Now, do they, you do charge for an initial evaluation though?
Yes. So that's another thing that you can do. Some doctors do free consults or free evaluations. I did that actually in my other practice. I did free consults for medically necessary contacts and Ortho-K, and I found that the capture rate was very low. Then I started charging $100, and my capture rate improved significantly. So I carried that over to my new business, where I charge a fee for the consult. And that way, in case they don't go through with it, or it's not the right time for them financially or with whatever's going on, at least they have the information, and, you know, at least I have some money for the time that I've spent with them.
Okay, great. Tiffany, do you want to unmute yourself and ask your question?
Yay. Hi, Tiffany.
Hi, Stephanie. So you kind of already answered the question about charging for your initial consult, but what exactly does that consult consist of? Like, are you doing the actual fitting, or are you just taking it kind of step by step depending on that first vetting phone call? Can you give us a little bit more idea of kind of that process?
Yeah, excellent question. So for me, my consultation includes topography. I also will do an OCT wellness scan of their retina. So I'm looking at their macula and their optic nerve just to make sure there's no surprises, because I have been burned in the past a few times. And then some imaging, so external and internal imaging. Then I go over all of that. I have this giant TV screen in the exam room, and I go over all of the data, and then we go over what options they might be a good candidate for. And then I have actual written materials, and I present the options that I think they would benefit from. So whether it's like a basic specialty lens fitting and an intermediate, I'll present both of those and go through what the price costs and then what will happen, what to expect and what it includes. and then they can decide from there which one is better. Or if there's a patient that there's absolutely no way they're going to qualify for any of these, they have to do something way more complex like an eye print or a latitude. I don't even present the other options. I just say, okay, based off of everything we're looking at and we're looking at it together, we can see that this is an extremely complex case. And this is what we're looking for as far as what you're going to be as far as time investment with me, what this is including. And then I just present them the information from there.
Okay. So you're not actually putting lenses on the patient's eye?
I don't. Other doctors do. So I have many friends that they actually put a lens on the patient, do a quick over-refraction, and then that way it kind of demonstrates the vision. Personally, I don't go down that route.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So tell us now, we know that keratoconus, those patients will come to you. And I found in all the years that a lot of patients don't know anything about orthokeratology, or we say overnight corneal reshaping. So are you doing some marketing at all? Or, I mean, how are people finding you?
So are you asking about finding me for the medically necessary component as far as keratoconus and, you know, that type?
Well, do both. Tell us about both, because I think people with keratoconus, they would know, okay, look, I got to find a specialist with contacts. But a lot of patients with ortho-K don't know anything about it. They've never heard of it unless it's from a friend or a relative. So maybe you could discuss what your marketing efforts are there. This is a business podcast, Eyetrepreneur.
Yeah.
So let's go through some of the business stuff. Of course, you know, don't reveal your fees or anything like that.
Yeah, sure. So right now I've created a folder that I take to practitioners' offices, or I meet them for lunch or for coffee or happy hour, whatever. And in the folder, it's got three inserts. One is a referral form. The second is my biography. And the third is a very quick snapshot if they don't want to read anything at all. It just has six key highlights of why they should choose Contact Lens Institute of Nevada. And it just kind of says, you know, I'm a fellow of the Scleral Lens Society, cornea contact lens residency trained, few other things. And so on there, the list of services on my bio, it's got ortho-K as an option. And so when I'm meeting with these doctors, I am going over, I actually have two different folders. One is for ophthalmologists and then one is for optometrists. The only difference is I don't put ortho-K on the one for ophthalmologists, because a lot of them think that that's voodoo and it doesn't work and there's no science behind it. And so that was just some advice given to me by some other doctors. So for the ophthalmologist one, I leave the ortho-K myopia management aspect out. And then for the optometrist one, I put that in there. And then when I am discussing things with them, I tell them these are some of the key things that I'm doing, you know, specialty lenses for keratoconus, post-transplant, post-LASIK, scarring, extreme dry eye. And then I also do ortho-K myopia management. So explaining it to the doctor that you're meeting with, I think is really helpful. Just telling them right off the bat. And then a lot of times they'll think in their head, oh my gosh, I actually have a couple patients that have asked me about that, but I don't know anybody in the area that does it. So I will happily send them to you. So just even making a quick note about it when you're talking to the other doctors, a lot of times they'll say, oh yeah, I actually have a few patients that have wanted to know more. And like, I don't do that. And no, so now I'm happy I have somebody that, that I can work with. And then I actually had a phone call with, Hal Ostrom this morning, and he had some really good ideas for me as far as going to like the Chinese Sunday school. As you know, like ortho-K is very big in Asian populations. So I'm going to start exploring that aspect once kind of everything passes through, but at least I can use this time to kind of develop more marketing materials I could bring to a consumer base instead of just referring on doctors.
Yeah.
Take advantage of the woo factor.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Instead of the wow factor.
Yeah.
So I obviously your business format of not having all this other ancillary parts of your practice really helps you court referrals. I know we call it optometry's dirty little secret is optometrists don't refer to optometrists for a fear of, I don't know, stealing a little glass of sale or something. So obviously you've overcame that objection by being contact lens only. What has been other practices' response when you're trying to court referrals?
Yeah, so the most eye doctors that I meet with are, they have been receiving my information really well because I don't practice primary care and I'm not doing eye emergencies or glaucoma, and I don't even have an optical. That's not even something that I'm doing anymore. So that has been really well received by the optometry community here in Las Vegas. And, but like you said, you know, sometimes optometrists won't refer to other optometrists, and we're notorious for not taking advantage of referring to each other when we're not the absolute best. And that is something I'm going to have to overcome. I think it's just in the early stages, I've just made some really, really good connections with some of the optometrists that trust me, and they kind of know me, and they know I'm not going to steal their patient. And I've already sent them back to them after their fitting is complete. So I think gaining that trust, you know, sending the patient back to the other doctor is huge. And I do think that me not having an optical and not practicing primary care is a huge relief for other eye doctors. Whereas other people, they want to get specialty referrals like I did when I was in Arizona, but I also had an optical and I also did primary care. So I could see how that could get a little dicey because you'd be nervous that they could potentially steal your patient. So I totally get it from that end. So I tried to remove any of that as far as being a deterrent.
That makes a lot of sense. So now, even though you don't charge for an exam, I mean, you still have to do an exam, don't you? I mean, does your board make you do an exam? Because you don't want to trust somebody else's refractive findings. I mean, you got to really do all that yourself, don't you?
Well, so I'll get information from their referring provider as far as their full annual eye exam. So I see what the refraction was, you know, their K's, their eye pressure, if there was any issues abnormal as far as their health goes. But I do have all of the machines to double check things just in case. You know, I have a, you know, fundus camera, I've got an OCT, you know, I have all the things that I would need to do a regular exam, but I'm not necessarily running through everything again. If there's something kind of fishy with the refraction, of course, I'm going to repeat it. I'm not going to say anything to the patient as far as, oh, I just want to double check your last doctor's work. I'm just going to do it and act as if it's part of the exam that we're doing.
Yeah, because I imagine you have still some restrictions from a state board level of what qualifies as the components of an eye exam. And you have actually have liability for that. So is that something that concerns you? Or you just empirically trust the other OD didn't get any pathology there?
Yeah, so I definitely am going to trust a lot of my colleagues that they've done a good full eye exam. But like I said, if there's something that I am not totally comfortable with, I'll just double check it in my office. And because the consultation includes almost everything that a normal eye exam would, I don't think that there would be much of an issue.
Great. Dr. Rule, I want to talk about some of your KPIs, key performance indicators. You know, being that you're dealing in larger $1,000 increments, you know, have you set kind of a goal for yourself? You know, is it, you know, 3 new fits a week? Is it 1 a week? I'm assuming your overhead's pretty low. You might have a staff member you might be the only one. That's good. Working for yourself is good without all the headaches. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the main goals for me for this new practice was to get really lean, get a very lean operation going. So that involved not having a bunch of overhead. So, you know, not having the optical and not having the supplements and the things that I had in my other practices. So that's great. And then with the employees, it's really just me. And then my husband also he's at the office with me whenever we have a patient, or if I'm with the patient, he'll answer the phone and he can help with you know, small tasks and things, but it was a kind of a blessing, you know, during this time. You know, I didn't have to lay off any staff, which a lot of my friends have had to do, unfortunately, but I feel very blessed that I did not have to do that. And my overhead is very low. They really, my only bills are my rent, my utilities, my equipment loan, and then just any of the bills from like the labs for the contact lenses. So I really don't have a lot that is that I have to worry about right now. And so because of the type of practice I was doing, I estimated the first month when I got here, I would do one fit in the first month, because it's going to take me time to get my name out there, develop marketing materials, meet up with doctors, have them refer to me. So I had the goal of the first month in January, I'm going to do one fit. And then in February, I'm going to do two. And then in March, maybe I'll do four. So I had this very realistic goal. And I think that really helped with where we are with, you know, these current events right now, where because I exceeded those goals very quickly, then I was able to put a lot of the money toward my savings account, so that if I don't have any income coming in over the next month or so, I'm not hit as hard because I've saved. So yeah, I would say I was very conservative in my projections, and I think that has really, really helped me financially weather the storm, if you will.
Perfect. I want to open up the floor to more questions and answers. If anyone's just joining us now, we're kind of talking about the business side right now. So Sophia, do you want to unmute yourself and ask your question? Here, I unmuted you. You can talk now.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Technical difficulties. Stephanie, I just want you to, I know you've gone through the list of a couple of the instruments you have, but can you tell us everything you have, like what you've purchased, what equipment you've purchased?
Great question. So that's a really good question, because I had a list of must-have items versus would-be nice items. And then I priced those out with different equipment companies. And once I got the overall kind of ballpark estimate, then that helped me choose what I wanted to spend the extra money on and what I didn't. But for me, what I determined was absolutely necessary is I absolutely had to have a topographer. I absolutely had to have an OCT. And for me, I knew I needed one that had anterior and posterior capabilities, because I wanted to make sure that the back of the eye, there's no surprises. And then for anterior, of course, for measuring pachymetry and for checking scleral lens things and that type of thing. So for sure, those things I absolutely had to have. I definitely wanted to have a scleral corneal profiler. So I have an SMAP because no one else in Nevada has one at this point. And so I wanted to make sure that if I am going to provide patients with the highest level of care and have a premium options, that I had to have that. For me, I needed to have an auto refractor. Other optometrists will do retinoscopy over the diagnostic lenses to get the starting point for the over refraction. If I had to retake boards, I'm positive I'd fail retinoscopy at this point. So auto refractor for sure has helped me a ton. And then, of course, a slit lamp, exam chair, phoropter. I debated between manual versus automated phoropter. Right now, I just have a refurbished manual phoropter because I felt like that's all I needed at this point. I didn't want to spend the extra money on an automated. That might be something I invest in the future. I also have an anterior segment camera and video. And that was huge for me because, for me, patient education is so important. And so I knew I needed it to spend the money.
The anterior segment, which model do you have? Or what company do you have?
Yeah, I have a Topcon. I forget what it's called. It's called the C4 or something, but it's an anterior photographer. So it's got photography and videography options. And then it also links up to my OCT. So I'm able to show the patient in the exam room. Once we're done with all the imaging, they sit in the chair and they're able to look at all of their data that we've collected together, which is super helpful. So for me, those were the things that I absolutely had to have. Other practices, some people need an automated phoropter, or they need to have a lensometer. I also have a radioscope, which is something that a lot of optometrists don't have. But for me, being a specialty lens clinic, I have to have a way to verify the base curves and the power and such. So those are the things that I absolutely thought were must-haves for my clinic. And I think other doctors you might ask, they'll say, you know, you absolutely have to have this piece of equipment. Like for one of the things that I struggled with for a long time was a Pentacam. I had a Pentacam in my last practice. And once you have one, it's really hard to not have one. But I just couldn't justify the cost of that being a startup. Absolutely, it's on my wish list, and I will get one. Especially for how much anterior disease I'm managing, I feel like it's the responsible thing to do. But because I'm a startup company, I just can't go with it for now. And when I visited other practices that fit specialty lenses at a very, very high level, I was really surprised at how many of them didn't have topographers. They just had kind of regular topographers.
Wow.
That's just something that I thought that I would absolutely have to spend the money on. And then at the last minute, I said, you know what? I just can't afford it. I will get it later, but at least I just need something to get started for now.
Which topographer did you select?
I have the Medmont topographer right now.
Okay, good.
All right. Well, can you kind of give us a layout of your office? I'm assuming it's fairly small. You don't need much space. Is it one exam room? Tell us about layout.
Yeah, great question. So my husband is an engineer. He kind of helped me design it so that it had more of a concierge feel, because this is a specialty clinic. You know, I wanted it to be a reflection of me and how I would want to be treated as a patient. So when you walk in, instead of being greeted by a front desk, like bam, right in front of you, it's actually off to the side. That's kind of where the check-in area is, if you will. And there's no seats there. So anybody in the future, right now it's just me and my husband, but anybody in the future that greets patients, they will always be standing to greet them. And I thought that was incredibly important. I was always very impressed with places like the Ritz-Carlton and the Four Seasons, where they always stand up to greet you, that type of thing. So we greet the patient. And then I take them to the waiting area, and you can see it. I think I posted it on my Facebook. It's amazing. It almost looks like a living room. So it's got a couch, a coffee table, and two chairs, because this is a very premium clinic. There's not going to be really more than one patient in the clinic at a time. So then I take the patient, and they go into the waiting area. And then in the waiting area, I have lots of refreshments, coffee, tea, iced tea, sparkling water, Voss water, beer, champagne, anything that you really think of. And I offer them a beverage, because that's where we're doing most of their intake. So they're in this really amazing, comfortable environment. And then I'm going through their history, collecting their information as far as, you know, their medical history, their ocular history, their surgical history, their family history. So I'm taking about 10 minutes or so, 15 minutes or so in that space, and I'm talking to them and getting kind of a rough history of what's going on, and then collecting all that information. And then after that, then we go into the exam room, and then I do some imaging. And then I have a special testing room, and that's where all of my big equipment pieces are. So then that's where I run them through all of the different pieces of equipment. Then we go back in the exam room, and in the exam room, I have a consultation table. So that was an idea given to me from my friend, Dr. Elise Kramer. She said, well, if you do a consult beforehand, that might actually really help when they're trying to select options. So That was an amazing tip that she had for me. So the patient, and then if they bring their spouse or a friend, they sit at a table, and then I've got this gigantic TV. I think it's like 60 inches, and we look at all of the information together, and then I go through the different options as far as what I feel would be best for them. After that, if they decide to proceed, then I ask them, would you like to be fit today? And 90% of them will do it right then. So then if they do, then we proceed with the fitting, and it just depends on what fitting we're doing. Are we doing an eye print or an SMAP or just a basic scleral lens fitting, ortho-K? So we do the fitting then. And then we collect the money, and then I call them when the lenses arrive. When the lenses arrive, they come back, and we have a separate area where we have a contact lens training. So in there, I've got a couch and a nice coffee table with some gourmet snacks like jelly beans, gourmet popcorn, things like that. And they're watching a video from the Scleral Lens Society that goes through insertion and removal of scleral lenses, how to take care of them, if that's the process they're going through. Then after that, I come in and we do their training, and then I give them their bag with all their tools and supplies in it, and then they leave, and then we follow up with them per the protocol, whatever they end up doing. So that's kind of the exam flow. It is pretty small. It's like 1,400 square feet, which is actually way more than enough. I have one exam room in the front that's not even being used. I just designed it so that in the future we can grow into it. So it's a small office, but pretty spacious for what it needs to be. I feel very lucky. I have a lot of friends in like Hawaii and New York where they've got 1,500 square feet, and they have like an optical, and they have like two exam rooms, and they have training. I mean, they're really doing it all in a space that I have that's just for specialty lenses. So I feel very lucky.
I just thought of something fun. Maybe we could do a little role playing of how you go through a sale when you have that patient who's on the verge of committing. Would you be cool with that?
Absolutely.
Okay, so Dr. Brill, you're going to be the parent, the dad.
Oh boy. Is this for, let's do it for Ortho-K though.
Okay, we can do it for Ortho-K. So you're the concerned dad, and you know, the little boy in there, he's a minus two. And we can go through how you present that and hopefully prevent myopia. So we're going to do that pretend session here where Dr. Brill, your parent, you need Ortho-K for your child.
Well, I don't know about Ortho-K yet, so I'm going to have Stephanie
tell
me about it. And she was the patient was referred to you, but the patient doesn't really know, or the parent doesn't really know about what's going on, why they were referred. So,
sure. Okay. So, all right, Mr. Brill, let's go over everything that all the testing that we've done on little Johnny today. So it looks like Johnny has something called myopia. That's why he wears glasses to see better. And what we're finding is that every year his vision is progressing and his prescription is getting higher and higher. And what I'm thinking is, instead of doing glasses, let's explore something called orthokeratology or myopia control. What this is basically little Johnny would wear a contact lens at nighttime, and then in the morning he would take the lens out, and then he would be able to actually see all day without his glasses on. And the reason this is really amazing, not only that he doesn't have to wear glasses anymore, but it's going to hopefully slow down the rate that his prescription is going. So the reason that's important is because little Johnny, even if he gets to these really high numbers, let's say he ends up being a minus 10 or a minus 12, you know, he's a minus 3 right now. So let's say his prescription got 3 times worse. Well, we can always make his glasses thicker. I can make them as thick as they come. The problem is, as he develops and gets more and more prescription, his eye is growing longer and longer, and that puts him at very high risk for certain eye diseases when he's an adult, such as macular degeneration, glaucoma, and retinal detachment. Some of these terms you may have heard before. Have you ever heard of those diseases before?
No, are you saying he needs contacts?
Yeah, sort of. So we could go a variety of routes. So we could just continue on the glasses. And let me show you this little calculator here. And I'll just pull it up. So if we don't do anything and we just keep doing glasses, at his rate of progression, he will end up being, in our predictions, around a minus 12 by the time he's 18. If we end up putting him in these special contact lenses, he may only be a minus 5. The reason that's important is because we're helping to prevent some of these eye diseases that may pop up over time when he's an adult.
Okay. I think I get it. You want him to be in contacts, and would they be soft lenses? Like his friends have, or no?
Good question. So these are totally different types of lenses that that your friends and family wear. These are special types of contacts that he actually wears at nighttime, and it acts almost like as a retainer. So does anybody in your family, have they ever worn braces before?
Teeth braces, right.
Yeah, so you know how after braces you have to put a retainer in to make sure that your mouth kind of stays that way, that same shape. It's a very similar concept where we put the special type of contact lens in the eye that he sleeps in, and then it kind of reshapes his eye so that it maintains that shape throughout the day so he can actually see without any glasses or contacts.
I thought you're not supposed to wear lenses at night.
Yeah, that's a really, that's an excellent concern. And these types of contacts are specially made to wear at nighttime specifically. And then he takes them out in the morning, and then that's how they get disinfected.
See, so he puts them in at night.
Right, exactly.
And then he sleeps in them.
Yes.
And he takes them out in the morning.
Exactly.
And is he going to need glasses?
So that's a good question. Based off of his prescription, I would estimate that he actually will not need any glasses to wear. We would keep him in, have him keep a pair of glasses for backup just in case something happened, as far as if he got an eye infection, mm-hmm. or something happened, he forgot his lenses when he went on vacation or something. He would always want to have a spare backup pair of glasses. But for the most part, the goal would be to try to get him out of glasses as much as possible.
Okay, so then you give me a prescription. I go to Costco like I usually do, or how does it work?
Yeah, that's a good question. So these contacts are only fit by certain eye doctors, and it's not something that you can usually get at just like a regular eye doctor. It's something that's specially certified or knows how to fit these types of lenses. So you would actually purchase the lenses through us, and we would do everything out of this office.
Okay, so that sounds easier. So, and I guess you're going to tell me how much they cost eventually, right?
Sure. So let me tell you about the program. So if you do decide this is something that you and your family want to do, what we would do is take special measurements of Johnny's eye. I will have a lens designed for him. When the lenses come in, we will try them on so that we can see how the lenses fit, make sure it's an accurate prescription for him as far as reshaping his eye. And then we will go through your training. So we'll show little Johnny how to put the lenses in, how to take them out, how to take care of them. And you'll want to be a part of that so you can make sure that he's doing everything correctly. And we'll give you all the supplies necessary. And then he'll wear the lenses overnight. And then I will see you again the very next day so we can see what kind of progress we've made. And if everything looks good from there, then I'll see you back again a week or two later. We can keep tracking his progress. If we need to make any changes to the lenses, that's all covered in this global fee. So the global fee includes the fitting, the insertion removal training, and all of the follow-up care, and one pair of lenses. So that's one lens per eye. And that's going to cover all the follow-up care for 6 months. So it's basically an all-inclusive package that includes everything that little Johnny's going to need to be successful.
So then how much money do I get back when it doesn't work?
Good question. It's all in the contract here that I'll have you read through. If for some reason that Johnny doesn't proceed or it doesn't work for him or it's not a good fit for you, this is the amount that you would be refunded, which is the cost of the lenses and then the cost of, you know, our time and all the staff's time, the equipment. This part is non-refundable.
Oh, I see. So, and do you offer any discounts?
For your first patient, so you're the first family member gets $200 off.
Oh, so it's $200 less than what you're showing me, or?
Exactly. So you'd be getting a discount if you decided to move forward today.
Oh, today. Okay. Well, I need to ask my wife because she usually makes these decisions and I'm just a lame husband.
Absolutely. And if she has any questions, I would be happy to answer them. Or if you feel like it'd be beneficial and you want her to come in, we can make another appointment with maybe all three of us and we can go over everything together if that sounds good.
So how do we know he can tolerate him? Do you put him in today or what do you do?
Yeah, we wouldn't go through that until, so I have to actually order the lenses for Johnny based off of the measurements. So I'm not going to put any lenses in his eye today, but when we do get the lenses in, that will be a good test to see if it's something that he will be able to tolerate. 90%, 95% of our patients have no issues with these types of lenses.
Okay. Well, I could do it as long as it's under $5,000.
Okay, excellent. And here's the contract and let's move forward.
But we want a few couple of spare pairs of lenses too.
Perfect. I have discounts for that as well.
Oh, okay. I tried not to give you too hard of a time. So
no, I didn't, no problem.
I want to shop around there. I want to check it out. So I want to check. Yes.
Hey, Dr. Wu, so do you charge a serious question, a pain in the ass fee? Because based on this conversation, sometimes you know it's going to be a lot of work. Managing the kids easy. You have a mature kid. They're good, but you have these parents that are just helicopter.
I want a copy of all the findings at every visit. I want everything at every visit.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have my structured, it's a three-tier structure, whether it's medically necessary contacts or it's an ortho K case. And usually I do it on complexity. So if somebody's like a high minus or they have like a strange HVID or they have a lot of cylinder, if it's a more complicated case, then it's a different price than if it was just something that was more of a slam dunk. But if we have someone like Mr. Brill, the husband that wants to ask 1,000 questions and you know that they are going to be one of those people that are going to want copies of everything, they're going to call you every day with questions, are going to bring Johnny in every single time there's something, his eye is just a little bit red or irritated, then yes, you should definitely increase your price because it's going to be more complicated. And the reason you need to do that is because if you don't, you will easily become discouraged and just say, you know what, forget this ortho K thing. I'd rather just go sell glasses and just not even have to worry about any of this stuff. So I think it's incredibly important to price things fairly and for what you feel you are worth. That is absolutely 100% necessary.
What about a payment plan?
So everybody has different payment plans that they accept. For me, I will do a payment plan of I can do half at the actual fitting. So when we're doing, so let's say it's a scleral fitting, we can do half at the fitting and half at the dispense, you know, 2 weeks later, if that helps, you know, with paychecks and things like that. I used to do a payment plan where they would pay like, you know, $200 a month or something like that. But I got burned back in the very, very beginning stages of my career. And the patient just never came back in. And so I had done all this work and fit him with lenses and he left and like only had paid $200, which like doesn't even cover the cost of one lens. So that's just my personal view. I don't do payment plans anymore. I do use care credit, but that's just the way I practice. I'm sure, you know, Ken Maller is online. He would be a good resource for payment plans and Tiffany too, just what they do. But in my practice, I don't do payment plans anymore except for care credit and then splitting the price up. But at least if they never come back again, I've got my money, and doing it this way for the past few years, there's been really no issue with people coming back in.
Hey, Dr. Rue, I want to talk about second opinions and price shoppers. I'm sure people will go to an insurance practice and then maybe they come to you and they want to know, wow, there's a big price difference. And, you know, they might see you as the gouger, which is terrible to say that. But how do you handle those discussions where there's such a price discrepancy?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So usually if a patient says, oh, okay, like, well, my last eye doctor was only charging me X and you're charging me Y. And, you know, why is it so much more expensive? So I just tell them, and I'm just honest, I just tell them, well, did you see any other patients in here when you were here? The answer is no. You will be the only patient here when I'm here. And that's how my practice is operating. You'll be the only person here. You get my 100% full attention. And, you know, of course that comes with a certain cost. And then all of the equipment that we've done, have you ever been to an eye doctor that has done that amount of testing on you? And they always say, no, this is like, I've never even seen these machines before. No doctor has ever explained or shown me the pictures of my eye. And they've never explained why I can't really see the best. So I think a lot of them do see the value once I go through everything. But if they do still have questions about why my fees are a lot higher, I'm just very honest with them as far as I have state-of-the-art equipment, and the equipment's very expensive. I spend a lot of time with you. You know, I'm spending an hour of time with you right now. Tell me the last time you were at any doctor's office where the doctor spent an hour with you. And they're most of the time they're like, I don't think ever. I think I see them for 5 minutes. I went to my cardiac doctor last week. I saw him for maybe 10. And so kind of putting those things in out there and just kind of creating the value and showing them the value, I think is really important.
Okay, Stephanie. So I have kind of a sore spot in, let's say either sclerals or orthokeratology, where somebody's gone to a fine doctor somewhere else in the country, and they know what they're wearing, a Paragon CRT. They've been wearing it for 10 years. They know what the prescription is, and they're just looking for continuity of care. So now do both scenarios, either one that it looks just fine and it's not a problem, or they're happy, but the fit looks terrible. Okay. And, so how do you handle both of those? We don't really have standards in optometry, what we do with transferring patients. And I found that while our colleagues and I, oftentimes they will not give the information, or the information is sparse or poor, and you do not get cooperation from colleagues, especially ones that, you know, are high volume. And it's been very frustrating. You know, you always have this is a person, they're a minus seven, and you think, God, if I take them out, I may not get them back. They don't have glasses. It's going to be 13 visits, 6 pairs of lenses. And they're thinking, like, I paid the last doctor $3,000, and I just really need a new pair. And you're thinking, this is going to be so much worse than rehabbing them and start, you know, doing a new fit. So how do you handle that patient? The transferees either doing well or not doing well.
Yeah. So once again, I think being fully honest and transparent is really important. So if somebody comes in and their lenses are doing well, and it's a lab that I'm familiar with their design, and I have an account, you know, I'm lucky, I've got lots of accounts with different labs, then I will just continue their care. And the price is going to be much less, because if they're doing really well, the lenses fit great, and they're just looking to, you know, make sure that everything's going well as far as their eye health, and they just need some new lenses, well, that fee is going to be a lot less, because I'm not having to do much work except for just kind of check a few things, get them some new lenses. Whereas if I see a patient and the fit is not good, or I have no clue what they're wearing because the other doctor will not provide me that information, I just tell them, I have no idea what's on your eye. So let's say that the other doctor wouldn't get me information for whatever reason, or it's hard to figure out from the parameters they gave me, I will just be honest and tell them, you have two options. I can refit you into a design that I am comfortable with and that I know what the parameters are. But if that's the case, we are going to have to take you out of the lenses. And if that is absolutely not an option for them, I just tell them you'll have to go back to your other eye doctor, whether, and that might be across the nation, but I can't do anything with the fit that I'm seeing. I really need to start over. And I think it's for your best interest and for us to prevent going around and around and multiple visits that are unnecessary and wasting both of our time. The best approach is to just start fresh. So we need to just be out of your lenses for a few days. We'll check and see what the shape is looking like, and then we'll refit you and go from there. And if they just absolutely will not do that, then I am not the doctor for them.
Okay. That sounds good. I've had patients where original, one of the NERF doctors who's no longer keeping current and would do daytime ortho K. The patients were seeing terrible. I had no idea why they were still wearing those. I ended up taking one of them out and he just was happy to be out. And the other one we refit into nighttime ortho K, and these were adults.
Yep.
But it seems to be a big source that it would be nice if you can identify the lab, if we at least had some agreement that if the patient gives us permission, we can call a lab that they were made from and say, can we get the patient's parameters? But I don't know, Ed, if that's possible, if we can get someone in the GPLI to say, look, we have to establish some protocols or courtesies that if we can't get information, perhaps if the patient okays it, you know, maybe we can get know at least what they were wearing. But
yeah, possible.
It's happened time and time again, and I can't believe that somebody across the country, not in your community, but across the country, would not share information or had hardly any information themselves. They call the lab and say, I need ortho K lenses, and this is their K's and RX. So that would be a big breakthrough if we could do that, especially for the patient that really travels across the country, moves every couple of years.
I want to open it up to some more questions here. Anith, do you want to ask your question? I know we covered it already, but it's probably good to review again.
Hey, yeah, sorry, I came in a little bit late, but it sounds like you guys already addressed this. But my question was, Dr. Wu, if you file on behalf of the patient for out-of-network benefits or use any services such as Patch?
Great question. So I actually did sign up with Patch in the very beginning, and I thought it would be an amazing resource and a very concierge approach to filing the patient's claim on their behalf. The issue that I had was with Patch, they only put you on the panels for a few insurance companies that are kind of in your area. So for me, for Nevada, there was like Blue Cross of Nevada, United, and like maybe three others. But the issue is I have patients that come from all over. So I have patients that are coming from Arizona, California, or there's something in Nevada called like culinary insurance, which is like a lot of the casino workers have that's not on there. So for me, I didn't find it super helpful, but I love the platform. I think it's so easy to use, and I absolutely wish it worked where I could just file on their behalf. But it just didn't work out for me. And I told them to reach back out in like 6 months and just see if they had a better system for accessing patient information. But for now, it didn't work out because I would have to call every single time a new patient was coming in and get their insurance plan added onto my panel or what have you. And a lot of times they couldn't add it on fast enough. So then I wasn't able to even do it for the patient. But great question. I think Patch is an awesome platform, and I really think that it is going to work out eventually. I just think it's for me where I'm at right now, it just didn't work out.
Cool. Any more questions?
Well, let's say, so a lot of people want to do IMED or VSP. Mm-hmm. And do you let them just file on their own on that or what?
Yeah. So in the beginning, I thought that I would just do VSP and IMED and Spectera, and I would just do the medically necessary portion. This is when I thought I was going to take insurance. But as you know, in the contract with VSP and IMED and others, you have to have an optical of, it's like 200 frames, and half of them have to be less than $100 resell to the patient or some things. There's like some stipulations in there. and you have to practice primary care. So because I was so firm in my belief that I did not want to have an optical and I did not want to do primary care, I just decided, you know what, I'm just going to forego that and they're just going to have to file on their own and as their out-of-network benefits.
And does that work for the patients then?
So far, I've had two patients, one that had Spectera and one that's had iMed that have been reimbursed. The other ones have been more medical cases or they don't have vision insurance. And I haven't heard from them as far as how much they've been reimbursed yet. It's probably just because it's too early to tell.
Plus, patients need to know if they're signing up for an individual plan. Often they do not have they don't have specialty lens, medically necessary lens benefits. And I think a lot of optometrists don't know that, but the patients for sure don't know it. They say, I'll sign up cheap and then I'll get all these benefits. And then they're disappointed.
Yeah. And I'm very clear on that, you know, these are my fees. This is what the cost is. And I will do anything I need to as far as getting you all the codes that you need, writing a letter of medical necessity, providing the insurance company with exam notes and images, whatever the patient needs, I will help them with. But I totally agree with you, Dr. Brill, that a lot of times they sign up for these plans and they have really no idea what they're getting into. And even the practitioners, a lot of my friends have been burned where they're like, oh my God, did you know that they only cover, you know, $200 and then the patient's responsible for everything else. So it just, you have to kind of make sure the patient's fully aware that, you know, of what they might be reimbursed. And I'm flat out just tell them, I have no control over what your insurance company will and won't reimburse you. All I can do is provide the documents at the highest level of what they need. And it's up to them and what's in your contract to determine what they are going to reimburse you. So if they have questions on things, you know, I just refer them back to their insurance company because there's nothing much I can do because I'm not credentialed with any of them.
I had one more question here. So there's a lot of us that want to know, can we transition a full scope practice into a niche specialty? You know, whether it's for, you know, dry eye, maybe that was your sole focus. You did nothing but dry eye, or for you, it's specialty lenses. You know, what's the feasibility of doing that? Just going cold turkey and switching?
So that's an awesome question. I actually created a document on my website for free that's 11 tips for building a specialty practice. And it's not just for contact lenses. That could be, you could use it for dry eye, you could use it for vision therapy, low vision. So it's on my website, which is www.clinevada.com/entrepreneur. Or if you go to the website under the practitioners tab, there's a document that says entrepreneur, and there's a at the bottom. Well, it has all of the tips on there, and then at the bottom there's an actual PDF you can download. But I thought it would just be helpful for practitioners that wanted to know more about building a specialty practice. What are some of the things that are super important? So I've created that for any of your listeners that are interested. But I do think that if it's something that you want to transition to, you have to be smart about it. And what I mean by that is it has to be something that you're really, really passionate about. I see a lot of doctors that kind of dabble in specialty lenses, but they don't really dive full in and they don't get the necessary equipment. And in the beginning, I was more on the cheerleader side of like, anybody can do specialty lenses. Like, yes, everybody can do this. And now I've kind of transitioned more into, well, if you are going to do these, make sure that you have the proper tools and the proper equipment because you want to be practicing at the highest level. And if you're not, you should really refer them to somebody that is. So like for me, vision therapy, like I don't do that in the very least. It would be to the patient's disservice if I tried to do that for them. So if you are going to transition to a total niche specialty, you can absolutely do it. And you have to be super passionate about it. You may have to make sure that you have the right equipment and the tools necessary. You can't just say, well, I'm going to start the specialty lens practice, but I don't want to invest in a topographer. That's like a terrible idea. So you need to make sure that you have all the equipment that's going to help you stand out. And then if you wanted to maybe slowly transition, you might want to kind of do something that I did in my other practice, where I originally was seeing all regular exams and post-ops and everything and eye emergencies. And then I decided, you know, I really want to do specialty lenses. So Tuesdays at from 10 to 11, that's going to be a specialty lens patient. Okay, great. Now that's starting to fill up. Okay, well now Tuesday mornings are all specialty lenses. Okay, and then the rest of the week I'm doing regular exams. Okay, now the entire day Tuesday and the entire day Thursday, I'm going to do all specialty lenses. So you, if you're scared about, you know, just starting cold and you don't want to lose out on income, that would be a good way to kind of create these appointment slots. And then as you start to fill them, then you will have more and more of what you're wanting to do, and then less of the things you're not wanting to do, but still make you money. And then you'll eventually get to the point that that's all you're doing. And if you choose to just do that, then you can create that system without totally just having all this risk and like, oh, suddenly day one, I'm only doing dry eye, not doing anything else. Just start creating some of those appointment slots, and then those are your only patients, and it can kind of build itself.
Well, I think you have the exact correct approach. Be qualified, first of all, and treat patients like it is specialty care, like it's not trying to rush them through. I'm always happy that we do not, or at least I don't know of many or any ODs who are cavalier about ortho-K or scleral fitting, where they just totally screw it up. You know, you can get one bad case in eye care and destroy the reputation of everyone. Ophthalmology tends to want to do that with ortho-K and makes incomplete or disparaging information there. We in Kansas City had one bad pharmacist who diluted cancer drugs, and pharmacy used to be the most trusted profession for many, many years until this one bad pharmacist diluted cancer drugs and went to jail. And now pharmacists are, you know, all considered to be suspect. So hopefully we will continue those high credentials and training. And with the help of all of us, GSLS, Vision by Design, we've been able to keep that so that the public really, when they get somebody that's an ortho-K fitter, hopefully they are really an ortho-K fitter or a scleral fitter. And if they don't know what to do, they're contacting someone like you or the specialty practice in the area. So before we go, I mean, are there any questions here? This is your chance to talk to one of the world's experts. And I'm talking about Dr. Wu, because there's all sorts of world's experts on here, about what she does, about how she does it, and what her success story is. Sophia, do you want to unmute if you have a question there?
Are you doing corneal grafts?
Yeah, I do. I do lots of corneal transplants. It's actually some of my favorite cases are corneal transplant cases.
Okay, so leave us with some final words here, Stephanie, and how people can contact you if they have further questions. We will be turning this into a podcast so that not everybody that's here, there will be people who are listening who really need to know how to contact you, and tell us your final words here, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, thanks everybody for listening. If you want to contact me, you can reach me by email. It's Dr. Wu, DRWOO, at clinevada.com. That's my email. Feel free to email me anytime. And I've got Facebook pages and Instagram pages as well, Dr. Stephanie Wu. And I guess just my message is, you know, even in the most trying circumstances, black swan events, I mean, there's absolutely a way to put a positive spin on things. And I really think that a lot of people have been concerned for me that I've started this crazy, risky business and at the absolute worst time. But for me, it's the total opposite. I think it's the absolute best time. Some of the top companies in the world developed during a recession. So if it ends up becoming a recession, you know, Apple, Disney, Google, a lot of these amazing companies were started in a downturn. So I definitely think that gives hope to a lot of us during these trying times. But yeah, if you're passionate about something, there's absolutely a way that you can go for it, and you don't absolutely have to do what I'm doing, where I'm at the total extreme opposite end, where this is all I'm doing now. But if it's something you want to integrate into your practice, I think it's absolutely, absolutely doable.
Will you have, you expect you'll have some international travelers that say, look, I'm happy to go to Las Vegas anytime. So I'll fit me now. I'll go back to Japan and then I'll be back in a month.
That was the absolute goal.
Nick has it, and Dr. Miller has it, and where there are international people, I don't mind coming back.
Yeah, and you know, Vegas is a place that people don't mind coming. There's plenty to do here, plenty to see, plenty to be entertained with. So that is a goal. Is hopefully my center will become a place that is international, and people are coming from all over the world to visit us.
And maybe a slot machine inside your waiting area.
That's totally possible.
Okay. All right. You just put the right scleral blanks in there, right? And then see if you can get all three of them to come up.
Yeah, that would be cute.
All right, Perry, do you have any final words?
No, I just want to thank everybody for joining us. And we'll be holding another live session probably next week. We're actually looking to get all the private equity players on the podcast here all in the industry, so we can have a discussion about that. We're not going to be talking about all of our numbers, but at least understand actually what's going on, because what you read in the threads is not 100% correct from what we've kind of investigated. But thanks a lot, and you guys are all awesome. So
Perry, are you having another podcast with Envision coming up?
Yeah, if you're interested in the optical side of things, I'm co-hosting a webinar with Envision Magazine Wednesday. We're going to be talking about what we can do in optical better after this whole thing blows over. I don't have a link for it because I'm not in control, but I'm going to be moderating that if you like the glasses side of things.
When is it, Perry?
It's Wednesday, I think maybe at like 3. I don't even know what time zone though.
Okay.
But I'll post it on the Facebook group if you're interested in attending. So. It's going to be about eyeglasses, just how to increase sales. What are we going to do during this kind of economic downturn?
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Have a nice rest of the week. Thank you, Stephanie. It was worth the wait for you.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care.
This brings us to the end of another episode of Eyetrepreneur, the podcast for Wizards of Eyes. Go ahead and click over to our website, eyetrepreneur.com, or head over to Facebook to join our special Facebook group, Eyetrepreneur. See you there.